Good morning, Kevin.
Hey, Mike.
Or I guess it could be afternoon.
It could be midnight. We just don't want to tell anyone.
Ooh, last night it was midnight when we were talking. Listen, I had a thought that I think our listeners to our Music, Life, and Times podcast here might be interested in. And you obviously have a dual music career. You're a performer and a very busy performer, but also you're a very dedicated teacher and have been for decades. And so I
has been 30 years.
I thought it would be good. It would be fun to sort of delve into that aspect of your life and get you to talk a little bit to our listeners about getting started. If you decide that you want to learn how to play music as a kid, or maybe parents of a kid, or as an adult, whatever, but just that getting started on that journey. And I'd like you to address that, if you would, today. And I've made a list of questions. I've actually prepared for this one.
Okay.
I thought I'd ask you the questions and let you respond in your teacher-like most mode.
Okay, I will do my best. Listen, what you got?
All right. First of all, I'll start with parents with kids, and my question was, what should parents of kids do relative to their music education? And again, we're talking about getting started here.
Well, I got a unique perspective on this, I think, because I mainly teach adults. When I teach privately, I teach adults. I teach kids at university or at the grade school levels in large groups. But one-on-one, it's mostly adults, and so many of them are people who have, very successful professional lives in their various fields, doctors, lawyers, people in publicity and public relations, or writers like you, and so many of them, had a bad experience studying music as a child. It was negative, or they insecure, their teacher was critical, but they knew they always wanted to play music, and now later in life they're pursuing it. And it's very interesting to me how many people have bad experiences studying music as a child. I have lots of ideas about why that might be. At the university, a lot of kids will graduate and not know what they want to do with their music, so they'll just go into teaching. But they've never trained how to teach, they don't study it, and they don't necessarily want to be doing it. And I think you get, it doesn't mean they're bad people, bad teachers, but you just have a lot of people teaching who have no experience with it, which is why it's so easy for me to get clients. I think if I was, because I get the question all the time, especially from clients, hey, my daughter wants to start guitar or piano or singing lessons, how do I find a good teacher? And I think the most important thing for a child studying music is that they've got someone who's teaching them the joy of it. Not that they're, I agree music is a good way of learning discipline and all this stuff, but I don't think you should do that at the expense of the magic and joy that is music. I mean, it's a big deal that we don't call it work in music. You play music, for some reason you practice medicine, but you play music,
Yeah. That practicing in the medicine part is a little scary.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, wow.
I think they should have it down by now.
Yeah. That's funny. But the best thing for a child is to learn the joy of it. There's this scene in the Ray Charles biopic called Ray that I think is so perfect. He's a young boy living in this little town, and he keeps hearing this old man playing a piano in this shack or restaurant or something in the middle of the day. And finally, the old man calls him in. I'm guessing he's like 6 years old or something. And he just tells him to, hey, let's play a song. And the kid doesn't know what to do. He says, just use those three black keys there. And the kid starts playing him. And then the guy's accompanying him. He says, now do that again. He says, now try those other two black keys. And they're making music. And he's learning. I just think there's something about that makes it the perfect lesson. In my own teaching, you know, I try to find goals for people. And if you're teaching a kid, I think you've got to, you need to find things to introduce them to that increase their curiosity about music, not only just some formulaic structure. Everyone's different. Was that a good answer?
Yeah. Yeah, and the kids themselves, you know, what can kids do on their own? Kids who are passionate about music. I mean, you know, I'm sure, I don't know about you, but when I was a little kid, I would just retire to my room and play records, let everybody else in the chaotic assembly of all my brothers go about their business in the rest of the house. And I would just like to retire and listen to music. So it was a natural
these records, did you download them from the internet? Or were you getting them from YouTube?
Yeah, you know, very early YouTube. Nobody knew that back in 1950-something we downloaded.
I mean, we're living in...
Downloaded them from the record store.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, boy, this is a golden age of opportunity in a certain way, because any young person anywhere in the world who can get online has the entire world's library of music at their fingertips. Sometimes I worry it's too much. Like, how do they know what to do? But really, the best thing a young musician can do is to listen to music with intention, like find the stuff they like, and listen deeply to it, you know, and stuff that gives you goosebumps. And if it's not, if you get bored of that, you spend time trying to find the next music with goosebumps. And then, of course, you've got all kinds of information, books, YouTube teachers, all kinds of stuff out there. Some of it's terrible. Some of it's no good. But it's never been a better time. My son fell in love with classical music at the age of 12. Didn't even tell me. And then spent 8 hours a day learning from online sources. I kind of think he did it the best way, because he would find other composers and reach out to them. Where normally, like when I was growing up, and I want my parents wanted to give me piano lessons, there was like one teacher near my elementary school, and that was it. Yeah. Her name was Miss Crabapple. I'm not kidding. And she would make me wash my hands and then drink a glass of orange juice before every 30-minute lesson. Now, I've been teaching for a while, and now I understand she wasn't a germaphobe and wasn't into my health. It was just a way to kill 10 minutes of the lesson. I understand that now, you know.
Yes. Yeah, I had my own. I had Leroy Sells. I actually saw his grandson at an event I went to a few months ago in my hometown of St. Louis, and Leroy Sells taught all five boys. We all had to go take piano lessons, and he was mean.
But yeah, she was a little mean too, but she was older, and you know, I was so young. In my memory, she was like 100. But I bet she was in her 40s or 50s or something, teaching out of her house. I still know where the house is, but I don't have no idea. I only stayed with her for a year. But, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, advice to young musicians. You know, if you're talking about, if I meet someone, a teenager or, you know, even college student, and they have fallen in love with music and they want to make an important part of their life, including maybe their career. The best advice I have for everyone, which is it almost sounds like, you know, something for like a TED talk or a presentation. I've done clinics on it, but I think one of the secret things here, after seeing and meeting so many people who do this for their life, is three things. And of course, it could be two or it could be four or five, but to me, it's three things. Number one, you listen to music as much as possible. And like I said before, music that gives you goosebumps. And then when you get tired of that, you find more. Because all the good musicians I know listen to music all the time. And we'll know what year this album was recorded and who played bass on it and about these alternate takes that were available on this one. You know, it's fun. Regardless of genre, people will know all these albums they listen to or symphonies that they studied. Or if you're an author, you know, their favorite writers and which books they like. And this chapter was great here. Then the second thing I want everyone to do is, if you're going to do music, you need to play music every day. And by play, I do mean frolic, like play for the joy of expression. I think a lot of young musicians will only practice. In fact, the one time I did this workshop, I called it, you can't learn to swim in a bathtub. I used an analogy about wanting to be an Olympic swimmer, but only swimming in your bathtub every day. You know, this playing every day, and that could be with your buddies. It could be playing along to a record. It could be going to a jam session. It could be getting together with your buddies, making a band and playing. But it's stuff that is specifically different from what I think is the third most important thing, which is you practice to solve problems. You don't practice just to practice. You practice specifically to do things that you listen to and want to do, and that when you're trying to play, you can't do. You know, it's like the first two steps are intrinsically involved with the practice part. I meet students who do, a lot of students will only do one of these three things. I'm not saying they have to be evenly proportioned or every day all of them, but all three play a role. And I'll meet students who only practice, and then they don't know how to play with other people, or they never have dealt with stage fright that everyone has to deal with. You have to deal with how different it is to playing in front of other people. Or you meet people who never practice, and they can only go so far. And every now and then you meet someone who only listens to music, and we call those fans.
Yeah.
We need them too, though, you know.
Yeah.
That's my general advice for everyone. And
right.
Every time I meet a so-called prodigy, I've met some amazing young musicians. They do all three. I think that's their talent, not some innate musical gift exactly, but just that they've immersed themselves completely into it.
Yeah, cool. I want to talk a little bit about this, dealing with adults now. My first, you referenced me earlier as a writer, and of course, that's the way I make my living now, most of it. But my first career, you know, I performed until I was in my 40s exclusively. But what happened with me is that I got to a point now, of course, primarily I'm a singer. I took piano lessons as a kid, worked with guitar for a while, and then got back to piano and realized that's what I wanted to get better and better at if I could. What happened with me is I got frustrated with my progress in terms of being, I was playing with some really fine jazz musicians in New Orleans, and I just wasn't up to their level. And I got frustrated. I said, all right, you know I can make a living as a writer. I'll fall back on my education, if you will. And then a few years, well, I guess it's been about 10 years or so now, I decided, man, music was so much a part of my life. It was my whole life for so many years. I've got to get back. And perhaps the way I could do this best would be to find somebody to study with and learn. Because I had never studied with anybody all those years that I was playing. I just had to rely on myself or somebody I ran into or whatever. So this thing about being an adult and either reconnecting or connecting for the first time, starting out as an adult, to learn to play or to play better. It's never too late to start, right?
Oh yeah, the oldest student I've ever had, and she just passed away last year. She was 92 before she stopped taking lessons. I have a lot of students in their 80s. And what's interesting to me is all of them, they think they're slow learning, and they'll come into a lesson and say, "Kevin, I'm trying hard. I'm sorry I'm so slow. You have so much patience." And I can't convince them.
You're singing my song.
Man, some of them are the fastest learning students I have. I mean, I'm not a neurologist. I don't study this, but I do read a lot because I love teaching. I read a lot about learning and teaching and different disciplines and stuff. And my understanding is that unless you have dementia or other cognitive things going on, that your ability to learn is related to how often you're using your learning skills, how often you're trying to learn. And Elizabeth, she was 92. She told me specifically she was mainly taking lessons because she was interested in learning to improvise. She had taught classical piano her whole life, but also because it kept her alive. Kept her going, you know, kept her wits about her, you know. This is her words, you know. So I don't think it's too late at all. And every time someone is talking about too late, early, I always worry that they're thinking about talent or becoming famous or something. I have never met anyone at any age who can't learn to do this stuff and be rewarded by it. You know, my I still take lessons, Mike, and I still practice. Because I enjoy the curiosity of it. I'm still finding new things out all the time. Now, don't get me wrong, I get frustrated too. I want to quit at least once a year. It's hard stuff, you know. But I think the hard part of it, I think it being hard is kind of what makes it rewarding.
Again, our general theme here, I guess, is kind of getting started. So when someone comes for an initial lesson, say someone who is passionate about wanting to learn how to play, but has never had music lessons before, has never had piano lessons before. How do you get started? Where do you start with somebody like that?
You know, what I like to do that it's kind of my niche, and I may not be the right teacher for everyone, but what I'm interested is teaching people how to play by ear and play who they are. I'm not as interested in just teaching mechanics. But you know, I have some strong opinions about it. You know, all of us learn to speak before we learn to read or write. So I teach students, if they come to me and they've never had a lesson before, not played, you teach the basic things, what the names of the keys of the piano are, if that's the instrument we're doing, you know, how to hold their hands up, all the beginner stuff. But I don't teach them how to read at first. I teach them songs by ear from the get-go. And they're all shocked at how easy it is. I actually think it's easier to do that first, and then you learn to read, because it's a great tool. Mm-hmm. And as I've gotten older and teaching longer, I think starting with the reading is not necessarily the best approach. That's what I think. Mm-hmm. I'm learning about
it. I think it's consistent with what you said about the joy of playing. There's nothing joyful about sitting down with a piece of paper and you know, writing out F-A-C-E, filling in the spaces, learning to read is nothing. You don't get any musical pleasure out of it.
Oh, my gosh, Mike. I talked about my first teacher. and I said her name wrong. My fifth grade elementary school teacher was Miss Crabapple. My piano teacher was Miss Moss. But I still have the very first book that she gave me to play out of, and we learned by reading. It was called Music for Boys, and I have it. I kept it for several reasons, but also I didn't really want piano lessons at the time. But my parents made me do it, and she was not paying attention, and she was old. And so what she would do is she would write the date on top of the song I was supposed to be practicing. And when I came back the next week, she would flip through the book and find the most recent date and then have me play. And I figured this out pretty quickly. So I didn't like reading. I didn't enjoy it. So I started erasing the date and putting the most recent date on it. And I would play the same piece for months. And she'd be like, Kevin, you're learning each piece faster than the last one. For the longest time, I thought she just didn't notice. But now I think she was just in on it and was like, fine. I have felt guilt about that my whole life, lying about it. But I just didn't enjoy reading it all. Maybe that's my bias here, you know, but I think it's true from a lot of the adult students I've had. Absolutely, reading music, everyone needs to learn to read, is what I think. It's an unbelievably useful tool. It's just learning the connection to the sounds first is important. I can't imagine learning Spanish only written. Like if I was going to learn Spanish, I can't imagine starting with only the written words.
Right.
Especially if I didn't know the alphabet. Imagine that. But that would be worth researching. Maybe if someone's going to learn to speak Farsi or Mandarin, what roles that would play in it, the written versus the spoken. Yeah.
Interesting. I've got one more question for you.
Okay.
And let's take a different level of student. Let's say a student who is, taken lessons as a kid, grew up, is in the high school, in his high school band. He's very interested in making a career out of music. He's played his whole life now. He feels like he's pretty good compared to, other kids in the school band. Whether it's, a saxophone or a trumpet or a piano or whatever, but he's decided that what he wants to do is he wants to become a professional musician, and he wants to pick a school to go to study music in college. What's that vetting process like?
In general, I think the two most important things about a school is going to be, what community is it located in? And who there do you want to study with? As opposed to whether the school is famous, a Berkeley or something, but more, here's this particular person I want to be my mentor. I want them to help me with my music. And then, is there a community of musicians there that outside of the university, somewhat in, that I can thrive and create and participate in? I feel sad when I have students who spend 4, 6, or 8 years in college and haven't even started a career. They haven't even started performing and sharing music with people. It's like they're already a decade behind. I feel like you need to go to a place where the university becomes a resource for you, not the whole game. Now, if the person said to me that what they want to do is that they're in love with teaching and they want to be a college professor, then you pick a school that's for that, and your whole world is going to be academia. But even in that case, even when you're doing your degree, you need to be writing papers and doing research and participating in the process of academia. But if you want to be a like a career professional musician, then you need to go to a place where you can be creating and performing your music, whatever that means, playing with other great musicians in your area that can mentor you, and then having people at the university that you really look up to who can help you learn the craft of all of this. That's how I would pick it. And of course, you can't say this school or that school, because people, you know, people who teach, they move from school to school or they come and go. I mean, the hardest thing is when you go to a school specifically for one teacher, and when you show up, you find out they just retired or they just moved to another school. But that happens, you know.
Well, Kevin, thank you. Those are great insights. And I think perhaps one angle of the lesson learned is that, you know, music is something we're going to have with us in our lives throughout our entire lives. And it should be an integral part of a youngster's education. And it's never too late to get started and learning more about music, because the more you learn about it, even if you don't perform as a professional, or but the more you learn, the more you appreciate, the more you can appreciate.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's been interesting, Mike, when I meet people from other disciplines who are coming for music lessons. How much is the stuff I just said, what has made them so successful in their own fields? It's the same thing. It's participation in a large community, allowing mentors play roles in your lives, and it's not a talent, you know, it's how much you immerse yourself in the whole thing.